Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is time for the latest edition of Zero Pucks Given, our hockey podcast here on Sports Radio WEEI. Joining me today is a Nesson colleague, a guy that I work with doing the games, along with Billy Jaffe and Barry Peterson and Andrew Alberts, and a former Bruins goaltender to boot. Andrew Raycroft is with us. Thank you for coming in. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, Dale, as always.
We don't spend enough time together, you know, during the course of the night job, so we just come in during the day job, too.
6 hours a night.
Let's, for people who don't know the background, I mean, obviously you played here, played in Toronto. But how did you end up back here doing what you're doing now?
The simple answer is my wife's from Foxborough.
That's a simple answer.
There was no way she was leaving Boston for more than an extended period of time other than to follow me around the world playing hockey. So that was the deal.
Including Europe,
yeah, Italy and Sweden. So we bounced around. But Boston, my kids were born here, all three of them. 2009 was my oldest son was born. So we've basically been here all summer since 2009. And it's a great place to raise the kids and grow up.
When we came calling, when Nesson came to you and talked about joining the telecasting crew, is that something you'd been thinking about or talked about? Or
it hadn't been at all. And it just happened that I was doing some Bruin stuff, you know, some of the clinics and just being around. And Kerry Collins kind of mentioned it to Nesson that I was around. And I went in and did a speak, you know, did the, what do you call it, like the audition, I guess it would be. Just went in and talked. And then, you know, I didn't really think much of it. They called me in for a game. I did the first weekend and struggled through it, but got through it and enjoyed it. And now I'm trying to get better at it.
Did you actually think when you were working with like Billy Jaffe, you were going to get to say anything?
I mean, did you? That was the one good. The first time around, it was easy to defer. I was deferring. Yes.
No, there's no deferring. There's seizing. My former partner Michael Holly used to say of Billy Jaffe, Jaffe would sit there before the telecast, say, "I'm going to take yo minutes." He gets cranked up.
He does. He gets passionate and he's into it. So I've learned that, and now I just need to be a little more aggressive, I guess. If I need my point,
you've got to seize those minutes from him because he ain't giving them to you.
They're not coming out.
It's a pretty active alumni association around here. We'll get to the current team in just a minute, but it's a pretty active alumni association around here. In fact, as we're recording this, you and other members of the alumni association are headed for Edmonton. You're going to play in Red Deer, Alberta, and some other places. That's more active than most, isn't it? Maybe the Canadians are like that.
Yeah, the Canadians and the Leafs are certainly the most active, just because they're in Canada and those opportunities. There's just so many more. But yeah, certainly the Bruins have a very active alumni. I'm super lucky to be a part of. It's pretty cool to go off, you know, on a trip with Ray Bourque and hang out with him in the van for 8 hours and hear stories with him and Nifty and all the guys. So, yes, we're off to Red Deer. There's eight of us, I think, going out there. So we'll have a good time, quick trip out there. And but it's been really cool to go and play the games even in this area. It's kind of like my beer league. You know, I really look forward to getting out of the house and hanging out with the guys and maybe having a beer afterwards with them.
In the beer league, you don't wear the pads, do you?
No, I don't. No.
Now, do the alumni make you? They say, sorry, kid, you got to play goal?
Only for the big game. So I play forward with Reggie. Reggie and I up front.
Because I know Lemelin ain't putting the pads back on.
No. He put them on for the alumni classic game. That was it. You know, he got his 15, 20 minutes in for that, and he's like, here you go, kid. So I played. Then I played against the Flyers up in Portland, had a game last season. So if we play like another team, whether it's the Canadians or, you know, and they need me to get in there because I'm basically the only younger alumni goalie to keep it close, then I'll do that. But otherwise, I try to resist putting them on.
I picture, not when you're playing like the Flyers or the Canadiens alumni, but I always picture some of these alumni games where you get some guy who's a little cranked up and, oh, those are Bruins guys. Oh, look, there's Rick Middleton. You know, I played a little hockey in my day. And all of a sudden he starts dancing around out there. There are ways to handle that, right?
Yeah, usually one of the senior Bruins alumni will pop his head. Either it's in the dressing room or he'll, you know, stop by the bench and say, "Hey, fellas, you know, this is why we're here, and let's not push the envelope here. We don't want to get anyone hurt, especially when they're, you know." Terry O'Reilly comes out. Taz is the best. He doesn't have a helmet on, and the guy's buzzing around. It's like, guys, you know, relax. So,
he of all of them, if he did suggest, you know, you might want to calm down a little bit, I would calm down a lot.
Yeah, he is the best, and he is still very intimidating. He is an intimidating human. So it's, again, it's a blast. But yeah, it does come up probably, let's say, one out of every five games. There's one line or a couple guys on the ice that need to be kind of told to pull it back a little bit and let's have fun.
Because if many of you guys wanted to, and I say this all the time, I'd like to have the talent of the worst player who ever played Major League Baseball ever, because that's a hell of a lot more talent than I ever had. So no matter how good these guys are, they didn't play in the NHL. All of you guys did. If you wanted to, you could win every game 20-0.
Within reason, obviously, we could have an older lineup against, you know, 20-year-old kids skating around. The skating around will probably, you know, outdo us, but certainly moving the puck and the way we play the game is much different than what a normal, you know, guy is normal or used to playing. Especially we played this weekend in Winthrop. And I don't really know how to play forward. I don't really know how to play center, but
you don't know how to play hockey.
I'm
saying,
a goalie.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
completely
right. That's
different.
A goalie,
it's a subsector. But Ray gave me a pass through the middle that I thought had absolutely no chance of making it. And it landed perfectly on my stick. Like I couldn't screw it up. And I as soon as I got it, I was like, that was incredible. And no one would probably notice it, but it was absolutely incredible. And so yeah, Ray, you know, he still skates better than everybody. So
is he the
awesome.
Best player on the alumni team right now?
Yeah. Yes. For sure.
That Hall of Fame thing sort of counts.
Yeah, kind of counts. And you know, again, we were in Peterborough and, you know, talking to him after the game. And, you know, you hear it when they announce, you know, all the things he's done. And, you know, I never really realized that he was so far ahead of everyone as the most points for a defenseman in the history of the National Hockey League.
Right.
And, you know, just talking to him after, I'm like, can anyone catch you? And it's basically like, no, someone has to get 90 points a season for 18 years. To be able to get me. And
that,
no defenseman's got 90 points in like 15 years in the NHL, period. Let alone consistently. So.
I mean, you look at the numbers like Paul Coffey had when he was part of those Edmonton Oilers teams, but he wasn't doing that for 18 years, you know? and when he wasn't playing with Gretzky and Messier and Curry and those guys, the numbers were a little different.
Yeah, and Coff didn't have to play defense either.
No. He was defenseman in name only.
Yeah, that's right. He was the Rover, where Ray actually, you know, had to play up against the best lines for 18 years, too. So it's cool. It's special for me to be able to hang out with those guys.
How many games a year do you guys play?
There's about 20 games in this area, and then there's probably about 10 trips that guys go on. But those trips can vary from anywhere from like two or three guys to eight or nine, which is kind of the most.
You could go with two or three and then just fill in sort of thing?
Yeah, so they'll set up like two or three games where, yeah, they set the whole thing up for charity up there and we jump on the ice with those guys. So there's definitely different levels. Probably, you know, like Red Deer, we're going to go out there and we're just going to play, you know, kind of what we do here where it's for a charity and people will put a team together. Last year I went to New Brunswick and we went around with the Canadians. So we played against the Canadians in four different places. So those
did
are
you reef Nylon?
No. Knuckles,
I'll go give it to
Knuckles
him.
Wasn't there that trip. Knuckles wasn't there, but yeah, he as whenever I can, he always, you know, grabs me by the shoulder at some point. So he's a good guy.
All right, let's turn our attention to present day Bruins, away from the alumni and present day Bruins. I'm curious your thoughts when you've got a team like Tampa Bay that has just sprinted out in front of everybody. They are clearly the best team in the NHL. Best power play. Best penalty kill. Nikita Kucherov's going to win the Hart Trophy. They got a chance of having a goaltender. Vasilevsky might win the Vezina. When they're that good, do the rest of the teams in the NHL stand a chance? Or is this over?
No, it's not over. Just, you know, we've seen it before. President's Trophy winners, you know, do have a hard time going through and winning the Cup. You know, injuries happen.
Ask
it's
the
a
Bruins.
Long season. Yeah, that's right. We've seen that up close here. So they're not out of the woods by any means. That being said, they're the benchmark, and they're the ones that, you know, what do we got? There's 13 other teams that are going to make the playoffs that are very excited that the Leafs, Bruins, and Lightning have to beat each other up in the first two rounds.
Do you hate this playoff format as much as I do?
At least as much as you do.
You know, if you think about it, the Atlantic Division is going to have three of the top five teams in the National Hockey League. Yeah. And two of those three teams will not be able to play for the Eastern Conference Final. Yeah. Two of those three teams are going to be gone before the Eastern Conference Final. That can't be what the NHL had in mind.
No, it's a joke. And it would be one thing if it was one of the teams, you know, if they were going to face off, you know, okay, I get it. But it shouldn't end up like this. I was really frustrated when I played. When we came out of the lockout, they did the same thing where they tried to go division-heavy games, where we played each other, you know, we played Montreal eight times. And then we would that's right. And you would end up playing like LA once, so it didn't. Or you would play one division. You wouldn't even play a division. Meanwhile, we're trying to get in the playoffs against Pittsburgh, who has the Islanders who stunk, the Devils who stunk,
the Capitals who still stunk,
and they played them eight times. So they were able to get points. So I'm really big. I think the conference, it should be 1-8. And the conference, they should play each other the same amount of times. Because you're fighting for the same amount of the points, the same playoff spots. It should be equally weighted in that way.
Now, is the argument for the present system that, okay, it's an unusual year this year. It's not always going to be like that. But the division rivalries stoke up the fans more. By the way, I'm not even sure that's true, but that's what they say, right?
That's the argument on the other side. And it really doesn't hold weight because it isn't a one-off, because it happened last year, too. These three teams, it's the exact same thing last year. They were the three best teams in the Eastern Conference, and they beat each other up, and then Tampa lost to Washington because they were beat up. You know, they had to play Boston. And so I think, you know, yeah, the rivalry can be some, but it's not like, you know, 1962 anymore, where people can't watch the games, or, you know, everyone knows what's going on in the league. There's not just one TV channel where you can only watch one game. Everyone knows the league. You don't need to play Patrice Bergeron in the playoffs every year to know who Patrice Bergeron is, or Brad Marchand. You know, he's disliked in New Jersey as much as he is in Tampa Bay or Montreal. So, you know, I just think it needs to be fair, and it needs 1-8 is great. I don't know why they changed that.
I will say this, and I know Jack Edwards and I have a disagreement on this one. Jack's wrong and I'm right.
Yeah.
You have to have every team play in every building in the league, in my opinion. And I know Jack wants more division games, you know, and you know, maybe you don't play in LA this year, or you don't play in Calgary this year. I think he's dead wrong on that one. I think Connor McDavid has to at least be available to play in every building in the league. Patrice Bergeron has to at least be available to play in every building in the league. I understand if you're only playing, you know, in Anaheim one game and he gets hurt, well, you lose. But I think you have to play in every building.
Yeah, Jack's wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's wrong.
You have to have that.
It has to happen. You know, it's one thing in the NFL when you only have 16 games and it's not physically possible. But there's 82 games. It's very easy to get, you know, to play the Western Conference twice. You know, if it's an Eastern team, it's very easy to pay them home and away. Lets the guys get on road trips. You know, the players like it that way. They want to be in every city as well. But yeah, there's no question that that was bad when they switched from that, and we didn't go to LA once a year. You know, and they didn't get to see Joe Thornton. You know, that was bad. Bad PR, bad for the league, I think.
All right, let's assume now, for the sake of our argument, that the, well, as we tape this, six Bruins are out of the lineup. Let's assume that they're all relatively healthy by the time you end the regular season and you go into the playoffs. If the Bruins have what they consider to be their normal roster, What's the thing that worries you the most?
More injuries? Is that an answer? You know that.
But
that,
if they're healthy, but you don't healthy, you don't have an area where you're saying, "Oh my God, they don't have a second line center. They don't have a scoring wing. Whatever it is."
No, I think the organization has enough depth. I think the forwards making the moves they made were ideal moves. They didn't give anything. They gave up Donato, which, you know, he's a good player. It could be a good prospect, but he wasn't going to make a difference in the next 2 months.
He's playing in Providence.
That's right. It was so they made great moves bringing in Johansson, Charlie Coyle in the third line. Their fourth line's been great all year. Their first line is obvious. So I think their four lines are great. I think their defense pairs are great. Carlos stepped up in a big way this year. He's really expanded his game and taken a lot of minutes and really solidified that second pairing, which you really need. And then the goaltending's been great, whether it's, you know, Tuukka winning 19 in a row or Halak the way he's played all year. So I don't have any concerns. It's going to come down to and the coaching. They're not going to get outcoached. You know, Cooper in Tampa Bay or Babcock in Toronto, they're not going to outcoach Cassidy and his guys. So, you know, it's going to be really hard to win, but there's nothing to be pointing at now that's saying that's why they're not going to win. You know, we'll look back and there'll be hindsight and we'll all say, well, this is why it's obvious. But right now it's not obvious. I think they can beat Tampa Bay in the second round if they're completely healthy.
All right. I'll be a smart ass with a goaltender sitting, you know, 6 feet away from me here.
Yeah.
You know what the narrative in this town is. Mm-hmm. You're never going to win as long as Tuukka Rask is your goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen him play really well in playoffs. We've also seen him play not so well in playoffs. Is Tuukka Rask strong enough mentally to take a team through four rounds of a Stanley Cup season?
Yes. I mean, he's done it. He has done it. He got to six
of Chicago series.
And if it wasn't for a crazy 35 seconds, you know, he would have got to seven of
those
games.
Which those same detractors say were partly, yeah, if not mostly, his fault.
I mean, I don't think anyone who's... You could go back and watch those tapes. Like, the things that... Those goals were not goalie goals. You know, they were crazy. It was a crazy minute and a half, and everyone lost their focus a little. But anyway, I digress. Yes. You know, look at last year, and you look at Brandon Holpe. All right. Makes the most amazing save in Stanley Cup history in Game 2. Paddle back, saves the series. They win the cup. He's the hero. He wasn't even playing. He didn't start the playoffs. He didn't play the first two games at home because he was playing so poorly. They couldn't, you know, he had one win in the last 3 months of the season. He couldn't win. And that I use that as an example only because that's how easily it can flip. And that's how easy you can go on a run as a goaltender. And, you know, I think these 19-game point streaks by Tuukka prove how mentally tough he is. You know, it's hard to do that over and over and over again every night, you know, but the spotlight's going to be on him, and I understand that, and I'm sure he understands that as well. I've never talked to him about it, but he knows that it's on him, and, you know, you need a few good breaks come playoff time to make it happen as a goaltender.
You've played here. You've lived here. You know the narrative around here. He's one of the most polarizing athletes I've ever seen in the city of Boston. There's a portion of the fan base, Bruins fan base, who love Tuukka Rask. He's won a Vezina trophy, got you to the sixth game of the Stanley Cup final. You know, he's a great goalie. And then there's a portion of the fan base here who just hate this guy. I can't quite figure out why they're two such diametrically opposed opinions of the same guy.
It is incredible. And, you know, I think there's been times where you could be critical, you know, at least in the last 4 or 5 years when I've been here. You know, I can't really speak to when I wasn't because I wasn't here day to day. But, you know, you can be critical of some of his interviews or some of the way he handles losses. And, you know, maybe, you know, there's certainly a culture issue. You know, he's not from here and he's been here a long time. But I think that sometimes that, you know, that's just the way he is. That's his personality. And that's what makes him so good as a goaltender, that he doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. You know, he's not slamming sticks. He used to and it used to be interesting.
It was entertaining as hell.
Yeah, that's right.
And firing stuff around the rink,
you know, he got criticized for that, so then he pulled back a little bit, and he is what he, you know, he's a mature, you know, 30-year-old adult goalie, but he's just never gonna have that same temperament that Tim Thomas had. And I think that's where this all comes back to a lot of times, is he gets that comparison to Tim, and they're just not the same people in any way whatsoever. But it does amaze me that there's so much to to both sides. I get that people love him, but I'm so surprised that, you know, why, what he's actually done for anyone to hate him. You could say that he doesn't have enough to get you a Stanley Cup, but it seems to be a level beyond that.
You mentioned the comparison with Tim Thomas. Because of the way the playoffs ended that year, sometimes people forget that through the first two rounds of the playoffs, Tim Thomas was pretty plain.
He was very plain. And
and then the last two rounds, he was unbelievable.
And that's where I say where that run where you can go on. He only needed 4 weeks to go on that run to be, you know, a god here in town forever. So that's all Tuukka needs. You know, and that changes the narrative very quickly. If he wins a cup, you know, there's a very good chance his number goes to the rafters at the end of the day.
Do you think so?
He's franchise leader in wins.
He is.
And
yeah.
He's got five more years into him.
He's got a Vezina, he's
got a Jennings, he's got a cup. I mean, it's close. It's much more in the discussion than it is probably right at this minute.
Goalie up there.
No. There's no 40 up there.
Damn, what the hell's wrong with these people?
That's it.
I hadn't thought about it until you said it, but then assuming that you won a cup, and that's a big assumption here. But you know, when you've won more games than any goaltender in the history of the franchise, and if you had a cup and you had a Vezina and you had a Jennings, there's a hell of an argument to be made.
I don't know what else. And it would end up being two cups because he did win. His name's on the other one, right.
Yeah.
And he was a bit of a part of the team. But yeah, certainly go back. Like Tim Thomas was one Hal Gill point shot away in Game 7 overtime from, you know, probably never playing again in Boston. Claude Julien was getting fired. They're going to blow the whole thing up. And then, you know, it twists and it goes on to be the hero. So it's just a break here and there that can really make a difference.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I will say there are times, and you mentioned the way Tuukka handles himself post-games. There are times when I'm rolling my eyes listening to him, and it reminds me a little bit of let's say David Price for the sake of argument.
Yeah, no, that's a great example.
Where David Price talks about, well, you know, once the ball leaves my hand, I mean, there's nothing I can do about it. Oh, don't tell me that. Make a better pitch. Don't tell me that it's out of your hands. You know, once the ball leaves your hand, it's not up to you anymore. And there are times when Tuukka talks post games, he drives you a little crazy.
Yeah, it can happen, and I see that. I think I understand it a little bit as being a goalie and as having those cameras in your face, you know, 5 minutes after, you know, you don't want to say anything one way, you know, and he might try and overthink it sometimes. I know I did that at times when I, you know, you just don't want to give anything where you could get jumped on for saying it. You just want to be
by a teammate,
by a teammate or by the media. You don't want to give up fault. And when really the reality is, you should just, you know, be completely honest, say it and get out of there. But I, you know, it's a tough situation, and I don't know his, you know, what he's always thinking when it comes down to that. But it's certainly a good comparison of sometimes where you can just, you know, do it a different way. And but I still don't know why you would go all the way to the end to say he can never win if just because you don't like the way he does an interview.
I will say that within the dressing room, and you've been around the team, his teammates love him.
Yeah.
And by the way, the Red Sox love David Price. Despite, you know, what some fans think of him, and there are fans who don't like David Price a bit, there are some fans who do. His playoff run last year certainly will help turn some of those around. But within their own clubhouse for the Red Sox, dressing room for the Bruins, the teammates love those guys.
No question. And fans should also realize that there's a lot of guys that fans love that the teammates don't love, that do a great interview, that say all the right things, but the players behind them are rolling their eyes. You know, like we're rolling our eyes at some of the, you know, David Price's comments, but there's guys in, you know, in the NHL that I played with that you would go home afterwards and you'd see them on TSN or NESN and you'd be like, what is he talking about? I've never heard him say anything like that around us.
Oh, give me a name.
No,
for
that's
God's
not
sakes.
Happened.
Come
that's
on,
definitely
Andrew.
Not,
give
no,
me a name.
Still, I want to go to alumni games still.
You don't want some guy briefing
yeah,
you
I
when
don't
you're
need
out
that.
There.
But no, it is a thing. And I think, you know, at times, I think he takes that on that the media doesn't like him, so there's nothing I can say, so I'll just say whatever I want, rather than changing the narrative a little bit, which would probably be good advice sometimes.
I joked the other night on the telecast that I'm sick and tired of talking about Patrice Bergeron because I'm out of nice things to say about him. And there are times when I think there are players like that that can cause some people to almost feel resentful. Oh, for God's sake, stop telling me what a good guy he is. Stop telling me what a great player he is. He's one of those exceptions. Nobody seems to get tired of talking about what kind of person he is or what kind of player he is.
No. He's, you know, I think I've played with three guys that are that good and they're that good of people. And
Raymond's one.
Yeah, and Ray, and I didn't get to play a long time with Ray, but Ray is definitely one. Matt Sundin's the other, and Brian Leetch. You know, and I put Patrice with those guys that they were just tremendous leaders and people and hard workers and humble. And you go on, and there wasn't any, you know, I've said it, like, if you want, I would want my daughter to marry Patrice. You know, that's who you want your daughter to marry.
Sean Thornton said in the book that I wrote, that you were part of too, by the way. Uh-huh. Sean Thornton said, I won't say this again, he said, but Patrice is the one guy I would let date my sister.
No, it's completely true.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest compliment a teammate like Sean Thornton could ever give anybody. Because you're with these guys all the time and you get to know their flaws. But with Patrice, his flaws aren't anything but being a great person. And so you can talk about him over and over again and guys won't be resentful in any way because they know it's true.
There was the mic'd up segment. And either Patrice's 1,000th game was against the Kings or when they celebrated it was against the Kings here. I think it was when they celebrated it. And all throughout the game, there's Kings players coming up behind him, tapping him on the backside. Hey, nice job, Patrice. Hey, congratulations. They bought him, the Kings, bought him a $1,000 bottle of wine and gave to him before the game just to congratulate him. That doesn't happen a lot in this league.
No, that's not normal. It isn't normal to buy another player, especially 1,000 games. Like, there's 1,000 games is special, but there's a lot of guys that have played 1,000 games. And not every one of those guys got a bottle of wine from the opponent, no question. So that there is a lot. And, you know, again, it goes to, you know, he's never judged anybody in the league. He's been around a long time. He's never judged anyone, never, you know, never criticized anybody or anyone out. You know, I'm sure he doesn't like guys that he's played against, but you'd never hear him say that.
Yeah,
he would never say it. You would never know. And he's just, you know, that kind of, you know, you're just a really good person.
You think about it, too, because, you know, now that he's played 1,000 games and I think a legitimate Hall of Fame candidate, his number positively is going up into the rafters at the Garden. And you think how close he was to having it all end. One hit by Randy Jones. He loses basically an entire season, and there were legitimate questions. Forget about whether he'd be able to play hockey again. There were concerns about what his day-to-day life was going to be like.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't around. I don't remember where I was playing at that time, but I know I came back in the summer and talking to a few of the guys around and saying, like, he's in a really bad place. You know, like, he's not good. Which in hockey terms is like, what, you know, if you hear that, that's, you know, code red, because otherwise you would hear, you know, oh, he's doing okay, or he's doing pretty good.
Right.
And, you know, for me to ask one of the Bruins guys, like, I would have heard, you know, for me to hear that, I was really, taken aback and, you know, nervous for him. But, you know, it's amazing how close he was. And I think at some point, when he's done, we might hear more about how bad it was. Knowing Patrice, he's not going to say much about it, at least until he's done, because he doesn't want anyone talking about him and in that way especially. But, yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, fortunately for him, the game's changed a lot of that's come out of the game, and it's allowed him to have a longer career.
ironically, the other guy that all of that stuff applies to is Mark Savard. Mm-hmm. He was in the bad place, and he and I have talked about it since, and he was in that bad place for a long time, and he's kind of slowly but surely coming out of it now, but it was a long process for him.
So that same trip in November, Savvy was there for one of the games up
playing
in
Peterborough.
I got to play with him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he gave me a few sauce passes that I was pretty impressed with, too. I played against Mark in juniors, and he's a couple years older than me, but we played against each other a lot all the way through. So, and we're not too far away from towns. But, yeah, he was, you know, he's doing much better now. He's still struggling. You know,
he's not
100%.
He could not play in the NHL.
No, not at all. And he's like, I can finally go and coach. You know, like that's kind of where he's at. And I can finally go and do some TVs because the light doesn't bother me anymore. And, you know, that's where these guys get to. And, you know, so it's a scary place. And I've got some friends that play that say the same things. It's these concussions are a real thing. And, you know, fortunately for the two guys we've just talked about, they're finding a positive life now.
All right, so we said that Patrice Bergeron is one of the few people who has the exact same reputation publicly. He's the same guy as a player as he is as a person. You know, he is that guy. The opposite of that is Brad Marchand, who's got a certain reputation as a player outside of Boston, which isn't very good. He's pretty much hated in most cities around the NHL until he's playing for Team Canada. Then they love him briefly. Yeah. And yet, every single person will tell you that Brad Marchand, the guy, is a great teammate, the guy you want to have around, the kind of guy you want on your team. It's funny, he's been able to keep those two things as separate as you could get.
He has. And I think he likes it that way. You know, I think he likes that's his edge, and you know, you don't really change from when you're 17, 18, 19 year old to whatever it takes to get here. You're always, you know, you're always afraid of changing something to get here because you don't want to not be here. And I think for Marshawn, he has that edge all the time that he's, you know, he has to play on edge and he has to be, you know, right there in guys' face and have something to say all the time to be an effective player.
He's a world-class chirper.
He is, and he's very quick, very witty, and very clever, and that alone, you know, gives you an edge on a lot of guys in the NHL. And I think he's done a good job this year, you know, pulling back and realizing that, you know, you can still play with an edge and not lick a guy in the face. You know, there is a line where any NHLers
licking of the face is the line.
You know, it is the line. Like that was like no one can defend that. You know,
no, it grossed all of us out.
Yeah, it was too much. And those kinds of things where it's like, okay, you can still chirp, you can still take a slashing penalty sometimes, and are unsportsmanlike. That's okay, but you know, respect the game and the guy you're up against a little bit more than licking them in the face. So, but yeah, certainly he's, you know, I'll give you two names that people hate here in Boston that I played with was Ryan Kessler and Alex Burrows.
Well, Alex Burrows especially.
Yeah, especially.
Biting the fingers.
Yeah, yeah. And those two guys were the best, two of the best teammates I had as well.
Really?
And I went to Vancouver.
Kessler, I could see. You're not selling me on Burrows.
I'm telling you, if he was sitting here, you would fall in love with him the same way, Marshy. It's exactly the same. And I went to Vancouver like, oh, these guys, like, how am I going to deal with these two all year? And they were the first two guys I got close to just from their personality, how much they love the game, how much they love their teammates, and great family men, great dads, great people. Again, you can't always judge the cover, and Brad Marchand's a good example of that.
I was talking to Patrice about it, and a week or so ago, the Bruins put out a tweet, and it was during warm-ups at the Garden, and there's the cutest little girl. And she's got the sweater on that's got the number 63 on the back. And the nameplate says Daddy on it. And he skates over to the glass. And he kisses his finger. And he puts it up to the glass. And he mouths, I love you. And I said to Patrice, I said, he's going to ruin his whole image here. What is he doing? And Patrice said, that's who he is. He's a great family man. Yeah. Now, he gets on the ice. He's a different guy. But he said that what you saw in that was who he actually is.
Yeah, and that gets lost sometimes, and when you want to criticize these guys and you go after them as much as we do as fans, you know, you do forget that they do have normal lives, and 90% of them are great people that just are, you know, at the end of the day, trying to provide for their family.
All right, let me give you one other guy who I think, like Tuca, has a real split among the fan base in this town, and that's Zdeno Chara. He's 6'9". He's 250 pounds. I swear to God, he's got 1% body fat. I mean, he is one of the most amazing physical specimens I've ever seen in my life. He could literally go out and play 30 minutes in tonight's game and be fine afterwards. We've seen him out there literally play the last 3 minutes of a game. And yet there's a portion of the fan base in this town that just can't stand him. You got to get him out of here. He can't play anymore. Now, I can tell you within the league, it's like that man is a beast. But there's a portion of the fan base who can't stand the guy.
Yeah, and that one is, you know, again, goalies can be polarizing in all cities and you know, especially in big markets. But for anyone to question Zdeno and where he's at, is crazy to me. Obviously, in town, we hear about another athlete that's over 40 that's
he's pretty good,
too.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
But he couldn't do what Chara's doing in all respects to how...
What Chara's doing... From a physical standpoint, is much more impressive than what Brady does.
Yeah, physically.
Now, Brady is the best quarterback who ever lived. I'm not. Yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
I know it's sacrilegious to talk.
But from a physical standpoint, yes. What Chara does is more amazing.
No question. And, you know, he's still the best defenseman on the Bruins. I mean, McAvoy does his thing, but at the end of the day, you know, they're not going to win anything unless Chara's playing 20, 25 minutes, killing penalties. And because he's big, because he's so long, it can look awkward at times, especially now as he get older.
Yeah.
It's not ever good. It never really looked pretty. He did get through it. He was there when he won the cup in 11, you know, 2009 to 2013, where, you know, you didn't really notice him because he was so good. And so, you know, that was in his prime. But now is, you know, he'll fall down sometimes. You're like, well, you know, when he falls down, you know, the building shakes.
Yeah.
So it's different. So I think sometimes that it can look awkward, or, you know, some of the plays he makes, it's like, wow, that didn't look like an NHL play. When reality is, he just has a stick that's 7 feet long and his arms are everywhere and he's just a large guy that it looks awkward. But for what he does for this team still, and what he's done for the organization for 12 years now, is as much as Patrice has done, no one's changed this, turned this around like Zdeno.
He's the third best defenseman in the history of the Bruins. And, oh, by the way, the first two are both in the Hall of Fame, number 4 and number 77. By the time Brad Park got here, he was kind of a shadow of his former self. Mm-hmm. I mean no disrespect to Brad, who I love, but he was not the same guy when he got here as he had been previous. I think this guy's the third best defenseman in the history of the team.
Yeah, you'd be right, and from what I can think of. You know, certainly since Ray, he's by far the best. And, you know, I guess since Orr, it's Ray and Zdeno. I don't think there's anyone close. And, again, what they've meant to this team and, you know, the way they play now and the culture they have now comes down to him coming here in 2006.
It's been one of the hallmarks of this organization, if you think about it, and I've thought a lot about it, you know, from Orr, through Park, who was kind of the stopgap, through Raymond, and then to Zdeno. This franchise has always had that cornerstone defenseman, that, you know, all-world defenseman. Even though Park wasn't the same as he was still, you know, Hall of Fame caliber guy. They've always had that one guy.
Yeah, and it's there's not many franchises that have had that could say, you know, they just to have one of those guys, let alone three, in the last 50 years. I mean, the franchises just don't have that. So the Bruins have certainly been lucky to have, you know, Zdeno around. And whenever he's done, which I'm, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be next season. You know, whenever he's done,
when those minutes disappear,
yeah,
off that, when that coach is having to fill those minutes with somebody else,
yeah, the people are going to be saying, you know, probably, you know, when he goes away, but everyone's going to be a little more fond of what he's done and appreciate a little bit more.
I always said that about Raymond too.
Yeah,
you know, when Raymond leaves, when Bruins fans don't have that presence out on the ice, they're going to realize how much they took it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. And, you know, they were lucky to get Char, but you could easily be sitting here now and saying, man, when's our next Ray Bourque coming? And 20 years later.
Might not be another one of those.
No.
All right, before we wrap this one up, you're a pretty normal goaltender. I mean, I got to be honest, goaltenders are weird.
Yeah.
You're more normal than most. I can remember Robbie Moore, who was playing in the Flyers organization when I was with the Maine Mariners, and literally threw up in a garbage can before every period, would throw up before the first and throw up before the second. And guys, you know, it was part of the game. It was Robbie's going to go throw up before the game gets going here. Why are you normal when so many other goaltenders aren't?
I'm not sure.
You're not normal, and I just don't know any better.
I'm able to like brush it off more. But no, certainly we all have all goalies have our anxiety issues to a point. There's no question about that.
When my daughter was playing high school and college hockey all the way up through, as a parent, I felt the worst for the goalie's parents. The poor goalie's parents are like, they're just living and dying every minute. They pass that on to you guys, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. My mom and dad, they got to the point where they just stopped watching. It went from watching the games in person to watching them on TV to turning the volume off on the TV to just, can't even watch anymore. I'll just, you know, get the score when you call me after the game. But there's so much pressure on the position, obviously. You know, and you feel responsible for 20 guys in the organization and the fans. And, you know, you just have so much responsibility, and you can turn the game with one bad goal. And it's always the negative. You know, you can make a couple good saves, but if you give up one bad goal, you're still going to lose. So there's always that in your head, and that's what makes it hard to sleep the night before. And the guys who, you know, are able to play a long period of time get used to that feeling and embrace it. But it's always kind of there in the back where, you know, when you let 20 teammates down, it's a lot easier to do that as a goalie than as a centerman or a defenseman.
Do you have a fight in the NHL?
No fights in the NHL.
Not one?
Not one.
No Byron Defoe, Olaf Kolzig moment?
No, that was the classic one. No, the second half of my NHL, I don't think I had a bench-clearing brawl in the NHL or even a 5-on-5. The one time it was, so I was called up, we were playing in Phoenix, and end of the game, I think it was Joe. Joe did something down at the other end. We were winning.
He had some stick issues
early
in his career.
Exactly. This was in 2002. So this was still early Joe.
He was doing dumb things with a stick early on.
He was bigger than everyone. He felt like he could beat everyone up. And we were in Phoenix and we were playing Sean Burke. And everybody got into it down at the other end. And I remember kind of looking like, do I have to go? Because it was still at a time where I didn't know that I had to go and grab him if he got involved. Where, meanwhile, the guys on the bench know I'm a young guy, are like, stay in your
net. Oh, they're telling you that.
Sean Burke's the toughest guy.
Well,
he's huge, and he could throw, and he was tough. So guys were telling me, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
We don't want Andrew to go get his ass kicked at the other end.
They knew I was 150 pounds. I was just going to get destroyed. No idea what. They didn't think I knew what I was doing. So that was one time I remember where everyone bailed me out. They didn't need me to go and help out.
It's like Barry Peterson joked that when he was playing on those big, bad Bruins teams, when there would be a line brawl out there, he said he'd have five guys grabbing him because they didn't want anything to do with anybody else on the ice. Everybody's going after Barry. I'll take him. I'll take number 10 over here. That's what it would have been like for you for a big brawl. It's like, let's go after Raycroft.
Get the little guy. Yeah, that's right.
That guy with the number one, go get him.
Yeah.
Well, it's been fun talking hockey with you. We get a chance to work, obviously, which is fun for all of us. I'm hoping it lasts a little longer than it did in the past. I'm counting on it lasting a little longer.
I agree.
I think there's a pretty good chance that could happen. I mean, I think
I feel good about them. I Tampa's a big one, but I think being that far of an underdog suits these guys okay. You know, I think they'll embrace it, and you know, with Patrice and Marchand and Chara, you know, they're a tough out.
Well, this has been another edition of Zero Pucks Given. It's sponsored by Red River and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Boston Bruins. My guest has been Andrew Raycroft, former Bruins goaltender, but now my colleague on Nesson. Thanks for taking the time to come in. I'll see you over at Nesson.
Yeah, you will, though.
Thanks. Andrew Raycroft joining us.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.